which is Cervantes versus Health Plan of Nevada et al. Number 56166, once parties are ready to go forward, please do so.
Realize you were waiting for me.
If you wish to reserve any time, please.
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, Your Honor, for rebuttal. May it please the court, on behalf of Margarita Cervantes and Jamie Rodriguez, the issue really, I think there's three issues. Our allegation at the lower court level was that the defendants, I'll refer to them collectively as Sierra, knew or should have known that the Endoscopy Center of Southern Nevada was engaged in unsafe medical practices. Despite that knowledge, they voluntarily made the Endoscopy Center as part of its network of providers. Sierra voluntarily made that network available to the Culinary Union Plan. Ms. Cervantes, as a member, received care from the Endoscopy Center because of its relationship with Sierra, and as a result of Sierra's negligence, she contracted hepatitis C.
Mr. Sharp, how many choices did your clients have as far as gastroenterology offices? Was Endoscopy Center the only one, or were there multiple choices?
Well, that was the allegation, and if you recall at the proceedings below, the summary judgment was filed immediately upon the same time an answer was filed. We were not allowed to do discovery pursuant to 56F. So I don't have a precise answer. I can tell you what we alleged.
I mean, was it in the record? I just
it was not in the record,
okay,
again, because
I'll,
we were not allowed to do that discovery.
Okay. Very good.
So I'd like to address, and I think there's three primary reasons why the court erred. First, I would submit that this claim is not preempted by ERISA. It does not relate to the ERISA plan as required by Section 514A of ERISA. There's a duty that exists of reasonable care upon the Endoscopy Center arising from its decision to make its network of providers available to classes of people like Mrs. Cervantes. And I think on the third basis, if this court is inclined to find it in favor of Sierra, I think we are entitled to do discovery pursuant to Rule 56F because we were never allowed to contest the affidavit submitted by the respondents. I'll spend the majority of my time dealing with the ERISA preemption, but I'm happy to answer any other specific questions.
Before you do, Mr. Sharp, what specifically, I believe it's Ramos's affidavit, were you wanting to traverse?
Well, there are two points. And I think it's paragraphs 3, 4, and 5 in the affidavit. And basically what Mr. Ramos says is we didn't really do anything. The culinary plan was the one who selected everything. Two of the Sierra defendants didn't have any involvement in any of these decisions. One Sierra defendant had a tangential involvement. And what we would like to know is basically the relationship both between Sierra and the culinary plan, as well as Sierra's relationship with its various subsidiaries. Because it's undisputed, as an example, that Health Plan in Nevada and Sierra Life and Health have an obligation to maintain quality assurance. My example would be is in the maintaining of that quality assurance, if Sierra discovered the unsafe injection practices or the various unsafe practices that we alleged, we would submit that it's likely the endoscopy center would never have been made available as a network provider for the coronary plan. So that's the specific. I mean, we outlined it in more detail in our briefing. Did I address your concern?
Mm-hmm. Assuming you didn't get that discovery, which the district court denied, then why isn't this just preempted on its face?
I'm sorry?
Why isn't this just preempted on its face?
Why isn't it preempted on its face?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the primary reason is when you go to 514A, which is the preemption provision at issue, the claim has to relate to the ERISA plan. And when the case law interpreting the phrase relate to applies the connection with or reference to, but under the Travelers case, it's really looking at, does this kind of case interfere with the uniform administration of a plan? And the answer to that is no, it doesn't, because ultimately at issue here is the quality of care Ms. Cervantes received. The obligations of the respondents to oversee the endoscopy center are totally unrelated to any administration in the plan. In fact, if you take Mr. Ramos' affidavit, the Sierra respondents performed no function for the plan that can qualify either as a ERISA plan administrator, or a plan sponsor. And under ERISA, the plan is a separate entity. That's the coronary plan. You have the plan sponsor, which would be the coronary, and the plan administrator, which would be the coronary. Now, the respondents rely upon the Bowie case versus AT&T. And if you look at that case, what Bowie is really talking about is the decision by the plan sponsor and the administrator to retain a certain service provider. In our case, really the respondents occupy the same position as SOS did in the Bowie case. And in that case, the claims against SOS were not preempted. And those claims that were alleged to have been preempted, this court specifically said there's no evidence that the SOS in that particular case acted as a plan administrator, and we would submit the same thing. There's no evidence, nothing in the record before this court, that any of the Sierra respondents acted as a plan administrator. If they weren't acting as a plan administrator, the claims can't be preempted under ERISA 514A. So, and with that, in addition to that, I would point out, under the Travelers case, there's basically three types of laws that the courts have found to be preempted. The first is state laws mandating benefits for ERISA plans. This case has nothing to do with the mandating. It's undisputed the colonoscopy was covered. The second is the state law that binds employers, plan sponsors, or plan administrators in administering the plan. There's nothing in this case that binds the plan sponsor, which is the coronary, or the plan administrator, which is the coronary. The third area would be state laws that provide alternative mechanisms to enforce claims for plan benefits. Again, there is no issue regarding the claim for plan benefits, so the third prong does not apply. And I think both Judge Hunt and Judge Jones in the Federal District Court found that virtually the identical case before you was not preempted by ERISA for two basic reasons. It involves a matter of health and safety that's generally left to the states, and two, it involves conduct that's totally unrelated and independent from the administration of the ERISA plan. And I would expand on that point to cite to the court the Dishman versus Unum case and the Bass versus Prudential case out of the Ninth Circuit. Those are two cases. And basically, what those two cases stand for the proposition is, if it's a claim for plan benefits, no matter how you dress it up, for example, if it was a claim over medical necessity decisions, that's ultimately a claim for plan benefits. No matter how you dress that up, that's a claim relating to the ERISA plan. Whereas if you're asserting a duty that's totally unrelated to the plan, then there's no preemption under ERISA, even if the defendant is a plan administrator, because there has to be a connection and reference to the plan. And we would submit in this particular case, the obligations of Sierra in overseeing the quality of care that was needed to be provided by the endoscopy center had nothing to do with the administration of the ERISA plan and anything the culinary did in the administering of that ERISA plan, and for that reason would not be preempted. And with that, I would add that the obligation of Sierra to provide reasonable care to people that they made their network available to, like Ms. Cervantes, imposes a duty of due care on their part. And if the as I said previously, if the court were inclined to rule against us, we certainly have an obligation under Rule 56F to conduct basic discovery as we set forth in the brief. And with that, I'll leave the remaining time for my rebuttal.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Larry Scarborough, and with me are Connie Ackridge and Alex Grimsley, and together we represent Health Plan of Nevada and the Sierra entities. I'd also like to spend the bulk of the time on the ERISA preemption issue, because it is the dispositive legal issue that the court below principally based its decision to dismiss the case upon. And I want to start by saying that nothing in the Ramos affidavit, nothing within the Rule 56F motion addresses the ERISA preemption issue or is relevant to that issue. The reason why is because everything that's needed to establish the basis for dismissal is contained in the complaint and in the various admissions that you've seen throughout plaintiff's papers. There is a paragraph that says that plaintiff was a member of the Culinary Union Plan. That plan is a self-funded plan, which is said repeatedly in the papers and acknowledged by plaintiffs to be a self-funded plan.
Counsel, so, why should we not be guided by the action of the federal district court in a similar case?
Well, there are two cases. I'm not sure which one you're referring to, but let me take them both. The first is the Sadler case. That's the Judge Hunt case. That was decided in the context of a motion to remand. The only basis for removal jurisdiction under ERISA is Section 502, not Section 514A, which is the basis upon which we moved in the court below here. There's no doubt that Judge Hunt addressed Section 514. He did so in classic dicta, as he himself recognized in the opinion when he said, because I remand, I'm not going to get to the core of the motion to dismiss arguments. That might explain why he relied on a template of analysis that was a multi-factor analysis, the kind of analysis that the Dishman case, one of the cases to which you heard plaintiffs refer, comes along later and says, Supreme Court has said that kind of multi-factor analysis is no longer appropriate in ERISA, and they go on to talk about a more holistic analysis there. That's why the Sadler case is not relevant. It also didn't involve a self-funded plan. The INSCO case, same issue, did it involve a self-funded plan? The answer is no. Now, plaintiffs strain mightily to bring INSCO within the ambit of self-funded plans, except for the fact, let me find the precise quote for the court. That what Judge Jones said there, we don't know what kind of plan it was, he didn't say, nor did he address the Deamer Clause, which is the key in self-funded preemption analysis. But what he did write was the following. INSCO was employed at Ross Stores, which paid for INSCO's insurance plan with Aetna. Paid for INSCO's insurance plan with Aetna. We know from the seminal case in the self-funded area, the FMC case, that that can't be, if that's correct, a self-funded plan. FMC, I'm citing 498 U.S. at 54, a self-funded plan, quote, does not purchase an insurance policy from any insurance company, close quote. So the fact that INSCO references the purchase from Aetna by its terms, whatever the reality is, and we don't know, removes it from a self-funded analysis. And to retreat to the base analysis in the self-funded area, we have a preemption statute, of course the statutory language is paramount, that has three components. It's got a preemption clause, it has a savings clause, and it has the Deamer clause. The preemption analysis starts and stops again in this case for the district court and for this court, we submit, on the allegations of the plaintiff's complaint. And what do they say? And I refer the court to paragraphs like 12 through 15, 29, and 42 through 44. They say the endoscopy center ought not have been within the provider network. They say that the defendants had a duty to oversee the kind of medical care that was being delivered and indeed had a duty to terminate. Well, within the area of ERISA preemption, that's the selection of the provider and the retention of the provider. And we've cited to the court not one, not two, not three cases. We've cited something like nine cases from seven jurisdictions, including the Bowie case that was discussed, that say that kind of selection and retention is absolutely the kind of administrative decision that is preempted by the statute. Now, plaintiffs actually acknowledge this because if you look at what they write about the Bowie case, they talk about those kinds of activities being administrative decisions that are subject to preemption. What do they do to try to distinguish themselves? They try to put the defendants in this case in the position of SOS. SOS was the company that, apart from administrative decisions, had the call on whether Mr. Bowie was going to be airlifted out of where he was to gain other treatment. So in other words, in that instance, SOS dove into the clear provision of medical care. Here, in numerous paragraphs of the complaint and in all their briefing, including page 8 of the opening brief, the plaintiffs make clear that they wish to hold the defendants liable for the medical care that was clearly provided by the Endoscopy Center of Southern Nevada. There is no allegation and nothing in the Rule 56 submission that suggests that they have any basis to say that the defendants actually were engaged in the provision of the medical care that Ms. Cervantes received. What do they say next? Having failed that kind of preemption provision and skipping over the savings clause, which is sort of given and taken away in the self-funded arena, if you will, they say, well, defendants, because you're not the culinary plan, because you're not the employer, then you are not able to avail yourself of any sort of preemption. Again, not one case, not two cases, not three cases. We've cited a wealth of law that ranges from quotations from the Fifth Circuit saying those kinds of distinctions are, quote, inconsequential, to the pharmaceutical case decided last year out of the D.C. Circuit that also makes clear that those kinds of distinctions are not cognizable in the law. And that makes sense, doesn't it? Because what they're saying is, if the plan does it, preemption attaches. If the employer does it, preemption attaches. But if they're not experienced and they turn to another party, more remote in time and space, it loses the ability to gain preemption coverage for the same identical sorts of administrative decisions within the ambit of the selection and retention. Those are the arguments that plaintiffs have as against the application of ERISA preemption, And as you've seen, the Deamer Clause, based on the holding of the FMC case from the United States Supreme Court, couldn't be more clear. If a plan is an insurance plan, the states can get at that plan indirectly through certain types of regulations. But if the plan isn't insured, the states simply are not able to regulate it, and that means that the basis supplied by what we've come to call in these cases the Nevada Quality Assurance Statutes, both the statutes and the regulations, simply have no relevance in the context of a self-funded case where the Deamer Clause is dispositive as a matter of Supreme Court law. Unless the court has additional questions, that's all I have.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you splitting time or?
Guess not.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me begin my rebuttal time by going back to the first rule of the road, if you will, with regard to any preemption case, and that's an analysis of the statutory language. And the statutory language in this case says in 514A that ERISA shall supersede any and all state laws insofar as they may now or hereafter relate to any employee benefit plan. The Bowie case says preemption is limited to acts done in the course of administering the ERISA plan. The statute says the plan is the culinary plan. The statute says the plan sponsor is the culinary plan, and the statutes say that the plan administrator is the culinary. Now, all of the cases that the respondents refer to you where there were instances of expansion beyond just the administrator were instances where the party seeking the benefit of preemption demonstrated specifically that they were administering and functioning as the administrator of the plan, like at the utilization review company making medical necessity decisions on the part of the plan. The pharmaceutical case that the respondent cited to, the pharmaceutical benefit manager was paying plan benefits for pharmaceuticals. There has to be that tie-on, and in this case, there is nothing. All of the allegations here pertain to the quality of care that was received. Everything that's being alleged against Sierra pertain to conduct that was done outside the course and scope of administering the ERISA plan. That's why Judge Jones in INSCO, in the very almost identical case, found no preemption because the conduct occurred outside the course and scope of the ERISA plan. In part, that's the same analysis that Judge Hunt received. Now, the other issue is the respondents say that there's some kind of distinction because it's a self-funded plan and therefore the Deamer Clause comes into play. And that, I would say to you, is a red herring. First of all, the Deamer Clause only applies. Its specific provision is 514 subpart B, subpart 2B. The Deamer Clause only applies in instances where it's first demonstrated that the tort claim is related to the ERISA plan. Here, there is no 514A preemption, so there's no need for analysis of the Deamer Clause. But to the extent that the court analyzes the Deamer Clause on its face applies to the ERISA plan. The ERISA plan is the culinary plan. It's not Sierra. So I would submit, if anything, the fact that this is a self-funded plan brings you further away from ERISA preemption. For example, AT&T and Lucent in the Bowie case, that was a self-funded plan. AT&T and Lucent were the employers, the plan sponsors, and the plan administrators. So it makes sense that their decision to retain SOS related to the ERISA plan because their entire conduct was connected with the ERISA plan. Here, Sierra has an independent obligation and an independent relationship with the endoscopy center, and all of their conduct in overseeing the endoscopy center is not connected with the ERISA plan. There was comment by the respondents that in order to fall within the SOS provision that we would have to demonstrate that Sierra actually provided the medical care. That's not, I would say, an accurate reading of the Bowie case. SOS did not provide medical care. What they were alleged to have done was delayed, essentially, in evacuating the decedent from Saudi Arabia. They were held negligent because their conduct was unrelated to the administering of the plan benefit. I cited to you in footnote 4 to our reply brief many instances where professionals were held liable for negligent acts, where a professional like an insurance agent, a lawyer, was retained to provide advice for the plan and was sued for negligence, and the negligence claim survived. Why? Because the conduct by the professional was not done in the course of administering the ERISA plan, so there would be no 514A preemption. There was comment about Judge Hunt applying a multifactorial test instead of the Dishman test in the Ninth Circuit. I would submit to you, when you read the Dishman case, it is clear that the multifactor case under the Ninth Circuit was more restrictive than the post-traveler cases. And on top of that, respondents pointed out to a number of cases they cited to, which they say stand for the proposition that these type of cases are preempted. And I would submit every one of those cases either involved a decision to deny a plan claim or were pre-travelers cases. And I think in this context, where the duty is independent of the ERISA plan, the conduct is independent of the ERISA plan, there is no preemption. And with that, I apologize for going a little over my time, and I thank you.
Thank you very much for the argument. We thank counsel on both sides for their arguments and stay shedding light on this matter. With that, this matter will stand submitted.